Amen. Matthew 5. We're studying the book of Matthew with a magnifying glass, so to speak. Looking at it, chasing it around, chasing the different subjects here. Jesus is just absolutely pouring hot lead and scalding water on these Pharisees all the way through here. Every doctrine, every little nook and cranny of their perverted religion, I say perverted religion, they have taken the religion of God and made it into a man, a religion of their own. Almost in every modern cult and ism, you can see some of the things that he's striking out, striking at the false premises of religion. Brother Abe, we really appreciate the songs that you bring to us. Amen. Every song that you've picked out has a gospel message in it. We need more gospel music today. Gospel music. We need some of that. We need gospel music. And it talks about our Savior calling us. And the blessings of being a child of God. These are wonderful things. Now, Jesus is going to start talking about adultery now. Adultery. And the Jews, these Pharisees, Jesus was a terrible sinner as far as they were concerned. A terrible sinner. He would have been stoned according to their rules. He didn't meet their rules of morality. A Pharisee, when he walked into a city, if he went to the market with his wife, he would never speak to her in public. That was considered promiscuous. You like that idea, Brother Bill?
I'm good to meet.
Might say,
they can't speak.
Well, one thing about Bill, if you couldn't tell you what, she'd buy everything in the store.
She didn't tell me what to do.
Yeah, well, they could not speak to them. They were so overly religious and overly moral. Too much. Too moral. Too religious for Jesus. Because the law didn't tell them you couldn't speak to your wife in public. But what did they do? We're going to find out some of the things that the Pharisees did. How immoral they were. Okay? You heard that it was said. Now, remember, Jesus keeps saying over and over again that it was said what? To the elders, to the ancient ones, to our fathers. Okay? Who said this? The prophets all the way from Noah and even Adam all the way this way. They had been taught some things. Thou shalt not commit adultery and all this. He says, you heard that you shall not commit adultery. Okay, you shall not commit fornication, adultery. Let me get my Greek out here so I can look at this also. At the same time. All right, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you, now this is much harder than their little saying that you can't talk to your wife in public. That's promiscuous. You can't do this or you can't do that. You can't walk on the grass on Saturday. You might sow seed. You can't eat an egg that was laid on Saturday by a chicken because the chicken worked in laying the egg. These are all ignorant. That's not in the law of Moses. Okay? He said, but I say to you that everyone who looks upon a woman to lust after her has committed adultery already with her already in his heart. And there was one Pharisee that didn't do this. He got them all. He got every one of them. What did he just say to them? You are a bunch of adulterers. Already. Didn't say you couldn't look at a woman in public or some other woman in public. Now what would they do? What was the Pharisees guilty of? Let's see what they were guilty of. All right, now, you know, when Jesus in John, the fourth chapter, when he talked to the woman at the well at the well. Mm-hmm. All right. Even Jesus' own disciples were very, very offended by that because he spoke to a woman in public because they were so entrenched in this Phariseeism. We talk about hypocrites and Pharisees. Pharisees and hypocrites. Jesus, in several chapters in the Bible, he said, "Oh, you hypocrites, Pharisees and scribes." He names them. They're the ones. Now, he's condemning them right here. Before he ever gets there, he's condemning them on every point of their ungodly lives. Okay? Now he says, if your right eye causes you to stumble, tear it out and throw it to the ground. All right? From you. For it is better that one of your parts of your body perish than the whole body to be thrown into hell. Now he's gone beyond all of their rules. And he's looking at their black hearts. That's what he's doing. And if your right hand offends you, stumble, cut it off. Throw it from you. For it is better for you that one of the parts of your body perish than the whole body be thrown into hellfire. He's telling them that you are sinners. The Lord calls you with His Spirit, doesn't He? He calls you with His Spirit. He calls you. He condemns you of what? Sin. What sin is. Now, is He telling them what sin is? He's going beyond what they thought is sin now. And here's the Lord of glory. This is the King of the heaven and the earth right here talking to them. He's convicting them of sin, of what true righteousness is, and what else? Judgment to come. Is that what he talked about? Hellfire? Judgment to come? Verse number 31. And he said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of dismissal. And it was said that whoever divorces his wife, give her a certificate of dismissal. Now, if you go back in the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 24 and Deuteronomy 22 and Deuteronomy 25, these Pharisees, after they got tired of their wives, they started looking around. And they saw one that they liked better. And according to them, if your wife snored, if she had bad breath, if she didn't keep your house just exactly like you wanted to, if she didn't address you as master, or whatever, in the right way, they could get a writ of divorce from them.
And now, people divorce today, that law is still in effect.
Huh? Today, I mean back then. Now, this is what they did. What they did was to condemn those wives. They condemned them. Go back and.
See, what did they want? Like a younger one? I mean, was there a reason for this? I'm thinking in my mind.
They wanted something new. Now, let me tell you this. These were a bunch of cheats and greedy people. And it goes on and tells you a little bit later how greedy they were. They loved money. Now, they could have had four or five wives if they wanted. That wasn't against the law. Okay? They could have had several wives. But when you have five wives, what happens? You have a great big grocery bill. You have to get a bigger house. Like one of them beehive houses in Utah, you know. You know what I'm talking about? All right. Great big house, sprawling mansion. This wife's over here, this wife's over here, this wife's over here. They could have had that back then. But it would have cost them. But those tightwads, they would rather condemn their wives and get them a new one than to marry another wife. And that was permitted. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, period. But they could have done that. But they were two. They had no natural love. They had no natural love. They could keep the kids. They'd keep the kids of the marriage, but they'd condemn her. And that's what Jesus is. He's condemning these Pharisees. Okay? Go back to Deuteronomy 24 now. Deuteronomos. What does that mean? Second law. When a man, boy, Bill, you're going to really like this. Listen, you're going to enjoy this lesson, Bill. Okay? When a man takes a wife and marries her, it happens that he finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some indecency in her. And he writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand and sends her out of the house. And she leaves this house and goes and becomes another man's wife. All right, it's talking about all of this business, okay, of divorce. He didn't like her. She snored. She didn't smell good. Something was wrong with her. He didn't like her. So he gets rid of her. All right? Now back, this is Moses' writings, isn't it? Yes, this is Moses. All right? Now why, Jesus is going to tell them why that he did this. We're going to go back to the New Testament. We're going to find out why the Old Testament said this. Okay? All right? If she leaves his house and goes and become another man's wife, this poor woman's been thrown around, okay? She's been cast from man to man, okay? Now, if the latter husband turns against her and writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand and sends her out of his house, or if the latter husband dies who took her to be his wife, here is the irrational ungodliness. This guy that marries her in to begin with, he's got his eye on some other girl. Okay? So he gives her a divorce. And these are all legitimate divorces according to the law of Moses. Okay? These are legitimate divorces according to the law of Moses. They can divorce their wives like this. You know why? Because of the hardness of their hearts. We're going to find out in the New Testament. He allowed this. Now this guy, one of my cousins back in Oklahoma, one of the Pawls, you know, one of these wild Indians. He married this woman. His name was Sikkim. All right? He was a fighter. And he married this woman. And he would get drunk and go out to the dances and drink and go on and run around on her. And he'd come home and he'd just be brazen about it. He would just say, she said, where you been? He said, well, I've been out with so-and-so. With Myrna or whatever, you know. Or Lila. And they get in a big argument and everything else. He'd go out and do this. Over and over again he did this. Finally, he started dating this one woman a lot. And she goes to, you know, met my cousin Bill. Bill that came to the deal, my cousin. His grandfather was called Eichard. So this woman, Sikkim's wife, goes to Eichard and asks him to go kill this woman. Because you know how these wild Indians are back there. They would shoot up people all the time. Say, why don't you go kill this woman for me? He said, well, I'll tell you what. He said, I'll go to the dance with you. I'll take the gun. You shoot her. I'm too old to be shooting people. He was about 80-some years old at that time. Well, she didn't show up. Anyway, he kept going out and seeing her and everything else. And he came home. And she said, where have you been? And he said, I've been out with so-and-so. And she pulls the gun out and shoots him. Shoots him in the leg. Anyway, he divorces her. And he marries that other woman. Well, he stays with that other woman for a while and decides that he had it better at home before. So he divorces her and he marries the other wife that he'd been married to before. Because it was better, greener grass was it really at home, not across the pasture, okay? Now this is the story that's here in the Bible. Then her former husband, who sent her away, is not allowed to take her again to be his wife. Because when he found out that the pastures were greener at home than they were over there, he had given her a divorce. God's going to stop this baloney right now. Sikkim did wrong, see. Since he has been defiled, For that is an abomination before the Lord, and you shall not bring sin into the land before the Lord your God, you as an inheritance. Number five. This is important too. Look at number five. What? What? Deuteronomy 24 and verse 5. All right, Deuteronomy 24 and verse 5. When a man takes a new wife, he shall go, not go out with the army, nor be charged with any duty, civilly, as a servant to the king or anything else. He shall be free at home 1 year, and shall give happiness to his wife whom he has taken. There, Bill, you're supposed to make your wife happy.
I'm thinking this that you guys all know.
Well,
that she's my soul. I pester her, and I don't know how she puts up with me, but I love her more than anything else in the world. But I'm thinking this, you know, maybe it's me, Jim, you know how my mind works. I'm thinking this, that he'd give him 1 year for her to be present.
He is giving her pleasure.
Make her happy.
He is making her play. He is. She's getting pregnant. They have a whole year of honeymoon to make love.
Yeah.
That's it. God made it that way, okay? He shall not be called upon to go to any duty, not jury duty, nothing. He's going to stay home with his wife, and he's going to have pleasure, and they're going to have children, okay? You like that one? Oh, okay. 22. All right.
Deuteronomy 22.
Yeah, Deuteronomy 22 now. Now, there's only one excuse for real divorce, far as God was concerned, and if the partner was unfaithful. Okay, if the partner runs around on you and is unfaithful, that's you get a divorce. That's period. That's it in the New Testament and in the Old. But in the Old Testament, it was a lot more severe. You got a divorce, all right, but you got it Italian style. You know what that means? Huh? You get somebody to kill her. You're free. All right. Let's go back here. A woman, when a man married a woman, she was expected to be a virgin unless she had been divorced. And in the Old Testament, when they divorced a woman and set her free, it was wrong. They gave her a paper of divorce in her hand, but the man wronged her. And Jesus tells them that in the New Testament. Now, let's see what happened. Now, this is the laws of virginity and the laws of marriage. Okay? Verse number 12, and you shall, 13. If any man takes a wife and goes into her and then turns against her, and charges her with shameful deeds and publicly defames her and says, I took this woman, but she came near her. And when I came near her, I found out she was not a virgin. Then the girl's father and her mother shall take and bring out the evidence of the girl's virginity to the elders of the city of the gate. All right? If a man married a woman and she was not a virgin, he could have her stoned. It was a death penalty. That's pretty strong medicine. Pretty strong medicine, okay? When a man married a woman, back in these days, on her wedding night, they put a cloth underneath her, and if she was a virgin, there was evidence on the cloth. And he took that to her family and gave that to evidence that she had been a virgin, all right? And they kept that. Now, if this man lied, her mother and father would have this evidence. So if that man ever brought any false charges against this girl not being a virgin, they would stone him, not her. Okay, this is custom. This is what they did. Okay? All right. 16, and the girl's father shall say to the elders, I gave my daughter to this man for wife, but he turned against her. And behold, he has charged her with shameful deeds, saying, I did not find my daughter virgin, but this is the evidence of my daughter's virginity, and they shall spread the garment before the elders of the city to see if she was a virgin. Okay? So the elders of the city shall take the man and chastise him. Okay? If he brought false charges against her. They shall fine him 100 shekels of silver and give it to the girl's father because he publicly defamed a virgin of Israel. You could buy just about two or three slaves with that money, couldn't you? This is a lot of money. He's highly, and remember, these people are greedy. Okay? Silver means torment to them. And she shall remain his wife, and he cannot divorce her all of her life for any reason. Period. But if this charge is true, the girl was not found to be a virgin, then they shall bring the girl to the doorway of her father's house, and the men of the city shall stone her to death. That's strong medicine. Because she has committed an act of folly in Israel by playing the harlot in her father's house, thus you shall purge the evil from among you. Verse number 22, if a man is found lying with a married woman, then both of them shall die. The man who lay with the woman and the woman, thus you shall purge evil from all of Israel. Now let's go back in the New Testament where Jesus is talking about this subject. Okay? Now what is he doing in this subject? What is the prime purpose? Who's speaking? Who's he speaking to? What's the subject? Who's Jesus? Who is speaking? Jesus. Who's he speaking to? Who is the message to? To his church, all right, but I'm going to tell you, there's a whole lot of Pharisees around him, and he's speaking to them, and they're sitting back there just grinding their teeth. Chewing nails, as they used to say.
I can picture it, Jim.
Yeah. What was it, chewing barbed wire and spitting nails? What it used to say? Mad. Mad. All right, let's go on. And it was said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce dismissal. But I say to you. Now, all these Pharisees, they were womanizers, so to speak, many of them. Many of them had divorced their wives for such reasons as, I don't like her, she didn't cook well, she snored, whatever. She just didn't please me. Okay? But I say to you that everyone who divorces his wife except for the cause of what? Unchastity. Adultery. Makes her commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. All right? Pretty strong charges. This upset in your apple cart, Bill. Because they had been doing this all the time and they considered themselves very, very righteous. Verse number 33. All right. Verse number 33. Let's go back to this back a little bit further, though. Back when they did this, they damned their spouses. They damned them. If they had any children by these spouses, they kept them. And they did not have Social Security. They didn't have welfare back in this time. Okay? A woman had to have children to support her when she was old. A woman had to have children to support her when she was old. If she didn't have a son to support her when she was old, guess what happened to her? She died. She starved to death. She starved to death. Remember the poor widow that Jesus gave such a great high lauding to in there that gave two mites? The widow's mites, you know, that she gave two little half pennies. Just like about 1 cent. It wouldn't hardly buy her anything, just a few crumbs of bread. But that was all she had, and she dropped it into the... And you have to remember, back then, Jesus, when he told about this woman that had nobody to support her, maybe her children died or she didn't have any children. They had a great big, like a brass trumpet type container where they would throw their coins in when they walked into the temple area. And the Pharisees would throw large coins and it would jingle all the way down real loud. Bing, ding, 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 ding. Look at me. The woman goes in there and she drops her two little mites in there. Click, click. And he said that woman gave more than all of the Pharisees, all of these rich cats. Because she gave all that she had. All right? If you go back in the Old Testament, in Genesis, a parenthetical chapter, we looked at it before a little bit. We looked at it a little bit before. I was going to go on, but we're going to study this one a little bit more. Luke, the 16th chapter. Luke chapter 16 in the New Testament. And then we're going to go back in the Old Testament in the parenthetical chapter in the book of Genesis. Luke 16, it talks about what? The rich man and Lazarus. Luke, the 16th chapter, starting with verse number 14. Someone read that for me. Luke 16, verse 14. This is really evident. We need. Are you over there, Brett? Could you read that really loud like you're speaking before? 16 and 14. Real loud. Just like you're public speaking over there at Cal State University, Bakersfield, up there giving a report, an oral report. All right? Luke, are you there? Okay. Luke 16 and 14. Luke. Matthew, Mark, Luke. You know, Luke. Is anyone there? Or the young man, are you there? Luke 16, 14.
How far do you want me to go?
I just want you to read 14.
Oh, just 14?
Okay. Yeah, this is what I've been saying now.
The Pharisees who loved money heard all this and were sneering at Jesus.
All right. The Pharisees who were lovers of money. All right. They were lovers of money. All right. Were listening to all these and were scoffing at him. All right. He talked about all their riches and he talked about different things. How about the sons of the kingdom will serve the Lord, the king. Now here was the king of Israel had come to them. Did they know who the king of Israel was? It sure wasn't Herod. All right, Herod was an interloper. He was a son of Esau, not of Jacob, not of Israel. All right? And they know that Joseph was supposed to be on the throne, not Herod. And, of course, Jesus is the heir to the throne because Joseph's already dead, even though Joseph really wasn't Jesus' father. But humanly, in the world he was, that was the firstborn son, okay? 16:14. And the Pharisees kept on being lovers of money and listening to all these things, and they were scoffing at him. And he said to them, "You are those who justify yourselves in the sight of men. But what? God knows your black, evil, wicked hearts. For that which is highly esteemed among men is detestable in the sight of God." Detestable in the sight of God. "The law and the prophets were proclaimed unto John. Since then, the gospel of the kingdom of God is preached, and everyone is wrestling, doing violence to the kingdom of God." And that's what's happened down through here. Marriage is a beautiful thing. That was created by God, wasn't it? It was created by God. When did God institute marriage into the human family? Genesis. Where? In the book of Genesis. Right when he created man, man wandered around in the garden talking to all the animals and communing with the animals. The animals were his companions. They weren't his food, by the way. And he was communing with the animals. He was being taught by God. And God said that man, he couldn't find a companion worthy of him. So he hypnotized Adam. Adam, that's what it says, hypnose in the Septuagint. He hypnotized him, put him into a deep trance and deep sleep. And it said he took from his sides, plural, not one side, but all of his sides. He took from him, and of course the word man was called what in Hebrew? Not Adam, but the other term. Ish. All right. And woman is called what? Isha. Thank you. Man, ish, okay? This is mankind, this is ish here, the feminine man, all right? And he takes from man, all right, he takes isha. Isha means what? Same thing as woman. It means out of man. He took from man's side. He didn't take a rib from man. I mean, it's been saying that ever since King James. But he didn't take a rib from him. He took bone, He took flesh and he took blood. And he formed it into Isha, which means out of man. And then he presented her to him in marriage. And then Adam stood up and he said, this is what? She shall be called Isha, woman. Because she is flesh of my flesh and bone of my blood and blood of my blood. Blood of my blood. All right? And he put them in marriage. Put them back together in marriage. And he made woman and man to fit together in marriage. They corresponded to each other perfectly. And now we have people today trying to marry men with men and women with women. That don't fit.
That's right.
They don't fit. God knew what it was. Okay? How to do it. All right? He said, everyone's forcing his way into it. What happened in 1123 A.D. in the false religion? What happened back there in 1123 A.D.? Anybody remember? What happened in 1123 A.D.? Anybody, any of you history students remember? Are you over there yet, John, your brother Don?
Is that when the Catholic Church implemented celibacy?
That's right. The Catholic Church invented the doctrine of celibacy with their priest.
And how that worked?
Well, that worked real good, didn't it?
I guess that wasn't a democracy party.
You know, the Pope is the apostle, according to them. And he can make new dogmas every day. No dogmas come from the Bible, from Catholicism. It's right from the Pope's mouth, okay? The Holy Papa, the Holy See, the great bull on the throne, okay? Well, he invented the doctrine of celibacy for the priest and the nuns. And boy, what a problem that has caused ever since. In Germany, in the 14 and 1500s, the priests that were in Germany, they said that they would not have anyone up there that didn't have a concubine because they were getting tired of raising the priest's children with their wives. Them seducing their wives. Problems all. And molesting children. It didn't happen in 1900. I mean, it's got all exposé all over the world now what the Catholic priests have done. But it started in 1123 with false religion, with false... God made a man and a woman to desire each other. He made them to correspond to each other. That's natural. That's what makes you seek a mate. All right? That's why you seek a mate. You desire someone that corresponds to you. Not he with he, not she with she. It's man and woman. Okay? That's the way he did it. Let's go on down here now. Doing violence to the kingdom of God. But easier for heaven and earth to pass away than one stroke, than one little olive or a towel or any of these little, a yod, not one little horn, not one little point of a Hebrew letter will pass away. The law was written. It's easier for heaven to earth to pass away than one stroke of the letter to fall. And then verse 18, let's see what he says about this now. Remember over here in Matthew 5, he let them have it. Now in Matthew 16, he's going to do the same thing. Everyone who divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery. And he who marries one who is divorced from a husband commits adultery. They were used to giving their wives writs of divorce and marrying this guy's wife and marrying that guy's wife. This was common practice among them. And then guess what Jesus goes right into? He goes right into a real story about a real Pharisee. And a real poor man. Now there was a certain rich man and had a habitually dressed in purple and fine linen, gaily living in splendor. And every day a certain poor man named Lazarus laid at his gate covered with sores. We all know about this story, this historical event of what happened with this rich man. And they were what? Up here in verse 4, and the Pharisees were lovers of money. All right, lovers. That's why they didn't take more than one wife. Because they were lovers of money. They could have had more than one wife, but they wanted to divorce the one and pass them around. Pass them around.
Did they pay alimony in them days, Jim?
No. No. They didn't pay alimony. You like that? False religion. Of course, the 1 Timothy 4, 1 through 3. Let's look at that. 1 Timothy 4, 1 through 3. We're studying. God knew all this stuff was going to happen in the future, anyway. Matthew 4, about marriage. The Spirit of God explicitly says that in the latter time, some will fall away from the faith. The faith. They're going to come from the faith. Where did Catholicism come from? Baptist churches. That's where it came from. They fell away from the faith. All right? They say they are the faith, the Holy Catholic Church and all that kind of baloney. But they fell from the faith. They fell away from it. All right? Paying attention to deceitful spirits and doctrines of what? What do you think that doctrine, where did that doctrine 1123 come from? Right out of hell. That's where it came from. It's caused the human race a lot of grief ever since. Because it goes against nature. That's why it goes against nature. By means of hypocrisy and liars and seared with their own conscience, with a branding iron. They don't have any conscience. They can just do whatever they want to. Charles Sage Russell, Joseph Smith, all of these great leaders that led people into damnation by the millions and still are, sear their conscience. Men forbid marriage and abstain abstaining from certain foods. Sound like Seventh-day Adventists, doesn't it? Today, the modern Judaizer, okay? God has created to be gratefully shared by those who believe and know the truth. All right? False religion does all these things, doesn't it? Well, does it or not? Yeah, it does. Go back to that little parenthetical chapter in Genesis number 38. Remember, we studied that over there a few years ago. Remember that one? Genesis 38, that little parenthetical chapter. Unusual chapter. Why in the world did God put this in the Bible? Weird things. You know, God does some unusual things just to show the nature of man. And we're talking about the nature of man right here. We're talking about the nature of man and his lust. Genesis. That's the first book in the Bible, Brother Brett. Bought a sheep.
I always think Job is.
Bought a sheep.
The first one put in there.
Yeah. All right. That's the first book. Okay. Let's look at this. A little parenthetical. It doesn't mean anything. You know what a parenthesis is? When I get up here and start speaking, and I start speaking parenthetically, I go off into some illustration, you know. That's parenthetically speaking. That's what this chapter is, a parenthetical chapter. It means it doesn't belong there. See, God just pulled it out of a real event and stuck it in here for a reason for that we can now understand today. Okay? Now we find out that Joseph has been sold into Egypt. All right? Joseph has been sold into Egypt. He's down there, and his brothers have done violence to Joseph and done violence to Jacob. Just think about old Jacob for a while. Jacob was absolutely, that man lived a miserable life, didn't he? Just think about poor Jacob. All of his life, he was in trouble. All of his life, he was running from somebody. Somebody was trying to kill him. His brother or somebody, or his son turning against him. He went over there and made a conversion of a whole town in Canaan. All right, he converted a whole town. He had a girl. Remember what that girl's name was? Dinah. Remember her? One of those Canaanite boys fell in love with Dinah. He took her and did like the Canaanites do. He just grabbed her and made love to her. Now, that didn't happen among the Jew boys. I mean, they were very upset about this. But the guy loved her. He was in love with her. This man was earnestly in love with this girl. And The boys, Jacob's sons, he was known as Israel by then. Jacob's son says, now we cannot give our daughter to you because she is a Hebrew and we are God's people and you are uncircumcised and we cannot give her to you. And they said, all right, what do you want of us? Just tell us, we will serve your God, we will do anything you say, but my son wants that girl as his wife. She's his wife now, according to our customs. What do I do? Because she was living with him. He had taken her in. He had kidnapped her, so to speak. But he wanted her as his wife. Evidently, the girl was happy. And they said, name your price and double it and triple it and quadruple it. Whatever you want. We want the girl. My son is in love with her. His heart pants for her. That's love. That's what we call love today. This is one of the love stories in the Bible, people. This is a love story. His heart pants for her. He loves her. He's got to be with her. Just name your price. Name whatever you want. And they said, okay, you have to become Jews. You have to all be circumcised. And then so much this and so much that. And they said, okay. So, the whole city where they lived, this Shechem, this whole city where they lived, they went to the judges in the city, in the gate of the city, and they said, hey, my son wants to marry this girl, but we have to adopt Judaism if we do this. We have to adopt Judaism. We have to become spiritual Jews. We have to become proselytes. Now, will you do this? Because they're going to be part of our family now. Everything we have will be theirs, and everything they have will be ours. They'll be part of our family. We can give their daughters to us, and we'll be Jews, spiritual Jews. And so all the men in the city said, it's okay, let's do that. So they all got circumcised, and 3 days after they were circumcised, when they were really sore and couldn't put on their clothes and go out and fight or anything, those boys of Leah went in there and killed every man and raped and pillaged the whole place. They had just been converted to Judaism, and they killed them all, murdered them all. Boy, Jacob said, oh, man, oh, a mess. We converted the whole town and you murdered them all. What are they going to think of us? Anywhere in the whole world. And here we have, now we have Judah, one of the boys of Leah, one of the sons that probably went in and did the killing. He decides he's going to have himself a Canaanite wife. Now, he wouldn't let his sister marry a Canaanite, would he? He killed the whole city of them. But he falls in love with this Canaanite girl, Judah does. And he has these kids by her. And these kids now are half Jew and half Canaanite, aren't they? Okay? They're half Jew and half Canaanite. Now, if they marry another Canaanite, that will be how much Canaanite? Come on, split it again. If these children marry another Canaanite, how much? They're not going to have much Jew blood in them, are they? They're going to be 1/4. They're going to be 1/4. They're going to be 3/4 Canaanite. All right. Came about, number 38, this is a parenthetical chapter now.
Let me get something in my mind here, Jim. You got me going for it. Under law, though, they would be considered full-blooded Jews.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
They would be considered full-blooded Jews, but actually they'd have been 3/4 Canaanite.
You can't even, according to the Jewish custom, the woman...
The woman is what passes on the child.
So you wouldn't have any full-blooded Jews.
Well, no, but really they'd be 3/4 Canaanite, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Now let's see what God. Let's see what God does to purify this line just a little bit, okay? Let's watch God do something.
It would be like us, even though whatever nationality are, we're still Christians.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They
would
still be considered Jews.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Chapter 38, the parenthetical chapter. And it came about at that time that Judah departed from his brothers and visited a certain Adullamite whose name was Hira. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite. Now this is it. Okay. So he just acts like a Canaanite. He goes in there, and what happened to his sister? What did the Canaanite do to his sister? He just grabbed a hold of her and made love to her and said, "This is my wife." You know? No dowry or anything yet. He just did it first. You know, just... All right? Now, Judah goes in there and he does the same thing. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shuah. And he took her and went into her. In other words, he had the act of marriage is what happened here, okay? So she conceived and bore a son and named him what? Ur. Which means watcher. Some people say it means iniquity or enmity, that is. But it means watcher. That means to watch out, to be a spy, to look around. In Greek, it is the name Gregory. That means to watch, to look. Okay, watcher. Okay. She conceived and bore a son and named him Ur. Then she conceived again and bore a son and named him Onan, which means strength. All right, strength. and she bore still another son and named him Shelah. All right, now look back up to Shua up there. That was her father's name, wasn't it? Shua. You'll have to realize that these languages are all sister languages. And what does Shelah, Shua, and all those names mean? They come from what? A word means which means peace and agreement. Shalom. Right. Which means an agreement. That's what shalom means. It means an agreement or peace. Okay? And he had made, paid for a dowry and had made, and this man by the name of Peace, and he names his third child, basically he names after him after his grandpa. Alright? She still bore another son and named him Shelah, and it was at Chazib that she bore him. Now Judah took a wife for Ur, his firstborn. Her name was what? Tamar. There was a lot of Tamars in the Bible. What does the word Tamar mean? What does Tamar mean? Brother Brett, do you remember that?
I don't.
Anybody remember what Tamar means? It means palm.
What?
Palm. Palm tree. It means, no, palm tree. Palm tree. Palm tree is a sign of wealth and beauty in the Middle East. Palm out here in the old days in the San Joaquin Valley here, if you were going to go to some estate, it was lined with palm trees. Every place you see a line of palm trees, that was a place where there was some president or senator or some big shot oil man or somebody. Huh? Yeah. All lined with palm trees. Palm meant a sign of wealth. It meant a sign of beauty, okay? And also, the palm trees over there, the date palms, were dates are worth their weight in gold at that time. Olive oil and dates. Okay? They're very precious commodities. Her name was Palm Tree, or beautiful. Tamar, stately and beautiful and tall and slender. Okay? That's her name. But Ur was Judah's firstborn and was evil in the sight of Jehovah. And Jehovah took his life. He was evil. The word evil is ra. Evil. Evil in the sight of Jehovah. Well, this is a Canaanite boy. I don't know what kind of a Canaanite gestures or whatever he took and made himself evil, but he was evil. And the Lord killed him. But remember, these children. Now, Tamar may have been, we don't know what she was, whether she was Jewish or whether she was Canaanite, but maybe they think she was Canaanite. Now, if these children would have been Canaanite, if they would have been children, they would have been of one of the tribes of Israel, and they would have been a three-quarter Canaanite, wouldn't they? Okay? So God stopped this right here. He stopped this guy in his tracks. And then Judah said to Onan, "Go into your brother's wife and perform your duty as a brother-in-law to her and raise up offspring to you for your brother." Okay? And Onan knew that the offspring would not be his. He's a selfish boy. He knew the offspring would not be his. So it came about when he went into his brother's wife that he wasted his seed on the ground in order not to give offspring to his brother. It's kind of embarrassing to say things. This is what you call coitus interruptus, okay? Withdrawal, that's what he did. So she wouldn't get pregnant. He wanted the pleasure, but he did not want. He was so selfish that he did not want his brother to have seed. The Catholic Church uses this for the reason for no birth control. You know, they say it's wrong. So this is one of the reasons they use it. There was an old saying many, many years ago, 100 years ago. It said, it's better to cast thy seed into a belly of a horse than to spew it on the ground. And this is the verses that they took it from right here. Whatever happened here, this was birth control. And he didn't want this woman to have his child. And this was a direct violence to the Scripture and a direct rebellion against the law of God. Now, in the Bible, under the law, you could be forgiven for a sin of what? You could be forgiven for a sin of what? What?
Anything except the Holy Spirit. You can't.
Okay, now let's go back now. Get back in the Old Testament. You're jumping over in the New Testament. A man in the Old Testament could be forgiven for a sin of what?
Omission.
Omission or what? Ignorance. Ignorance. Did he ignorantly sin here? No. He intentionally sinned. And this was a sin against God because this was a command that he was to do this. The command was that he was supposed to raise children up for his brother so that he would have children. Now, if this child would have been born, how much Canaanite would he have been? Three quarters. Still.
But he would have been the heir of the throne.
But he would have been an heir. He would have been one of the tribes of Israel.
Instead of
one of the sons of Israel. All right. Okay. But this would have been in his brother's name. He was selfish, and this was a willful sin, and so God killed him. There isn't any forgiveness or sacrifices for willful sins. Willful sins were the death penalty. When you willfully stood to God and shook your fist at God and said, I'm going to do this. I'll do what I'm going to do anyway. And basically, that's what this boy did. That's evil. People, evil. Let's go on a little bit further. But what he did was displeasing the sight of the Lord, and he took his life also, so God killed him. This is a sin of willful rebellion against God. Okay? Verse number 11. All this is about marriage now. All about marriage and having kids and all of this. In the book of Hebrews, it says the marriage bed is undefiled and pure in the sight of God. It tells us in the New Testament, Paul teaching in the churches, he said, a man and a woman shall not keep themselves from their husband and cause their husbands or their wives to burn in lust. It tells that a young woman, if she's a widow, for her to marry. Therefore, she will not have to burn in lust. Women and men both like the opposite sex. God made it that way, okay? And a young widow, he says, we know that if she works in the church and just gives herself to the service of the Lord and everything else, that she is probably going to be seduced or seduce somebody. So it's better that she marry, okay? And God makes statements straight out about this, okay? Then Judah said to his daughter-in-law, Tamar, remain a widow in your father's house until my son Shelah grows up, for he thought that I'm afraid that he too may be dying like his brothers. Now, he was probably young enough to go into this woman and to cause her to have children at this time. He was probably sexually mature enough to do this. All right? So Tamar went and lived in her father's house. By the way, she had all of the inheritance of both of these husbands. Both of the husbands were, all of their inheritance were hers. So she's got a double household now, Tamar does. to home. Now, after a considerable time, Shua's daughter, the wife of Judah, died. Okay, they don't say the woman's name. This is Judah's wife died. Okay, now he's lost two of the boys and his wife, and he's in mourning. Okay, he's in mourning. And when the time of mourning was ended, Judah went up to his sheep shearers at Timnah, and he and his friend Hira and Adullamite. Now, God put this in his book. This is an unusual parenthetical story, but he put it in his book. We're talking about marriage. We're talking about the desire that a man and a woman has for each other. God put it there. God did it. Okay? The devil didn't do it. God put it there. Okay? The Catholic Church will tell you all of it's evil. You know, when a woman goes to confession, or a man goes to confession, they have to tell when they had relations with their mother, with her husbands or wives. And they condemn them and have to say so many Hail Marys for that. Stupid. That's normal. That's normal behavior in the human race. God made it that way. And it was told to Tamar, behold, your father-in-law is going up to Timnah to shear his sheep. And she removed her widow's garments and covered herself with a veil and wrapped herself and sat in the gateway at Enaim, which is the road to Timnah. And she saw that Shelah had grown up. This boy was growing up. He was 6 and mature, and he could have come to her, and she could have had a child, and that boy could have raised up seed for her first husband and her second husband. Both of them now. None of them have any seed. None of them have any heirs. And she had not been given to him as a wife. So Judah saw her, and he thought that she was a prostitute. Prostitute. A professional prostitute. For she had covered her face. The prostitutes didn't want to see their face. You know, they didn't want to see who they were. And she turned aside to her by the road and said, here now, let me come into you. I want to cohabit with you. For he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. And she said, what will you give me that you may come into me? And he said, therefore I will send you a young goat from the flock. And she said, moreover, what will you give me in pledge to send it before you send it? Now look and see what this girl is really crafty. This man has done her wrong. Judah is a sinner. All right? Now if this other boy would have died, Judah would have been called upon to give seed to this woman so she would have a line for the 3 sons that he had lost, if he had lost 3 of them. Well, he didn't want to lose the other boy. He didn't know what was going on here, but he wasn't going to risk his life and give her. He was going to leave this woman barren. And that was against the law, wasn't it? So he was a willful sinner. So now look and see what God's going to do to this guy. What will you give me the pledge until you send it? And he said, What pledge shall I give you? And she said, I want your seal. What was that seal? Signet ring that had his name on it. That they would seal every letter, every document with anything that was a clay tablet or anything had that seal in it. Okay? And your cord, your belt, sash, which had his name on it. And your staff, which had his genealogy on it. The whole history of his family on that staff. Did you know it? This is all she had him nailed, didn't she? She knew exactly who he was and the whole lineage of his family. This is it. In your hand. And so he gave it to her and went into her, and she conceived by him. Now she can not only conceived, but she was going to have twins. God really blessed this. I mean, you see this? This man, this is what should have happened. Seed should have been raised up for her husband. She literally married them, and he was going to leave her off. We're talking about this in the New Testament. A Pharisee would have let her die childless and starve to death. And not only that, but they would have no children to make up the tribes of Israel. You look later on and find out where this comes from. We wouldn't have Jesus if it hadn't been for this. Did you know that? This is where Jesus came through right here. This is where Jesus came from. This is the lineage of the Messiah. Then she arose and departed and removed her veil and put on her widow's garments. And Judah said, a kid by the Adullamite to receive the pledge from the woman's hand, and he does not find her. And he asked the men of her place, saying, "Where is the temple prostitute who was by the road in any name?" But they said, "There is no temple prostitute there." So he turned to Judah and said, "I did not find her." And furthermore, the men of the place said, "There has been no temple prostitute here at all." Judah said, "Let her keep them, lest we become a laughingstock. After all, I sent the kid, and I've taken care of my part of the bargain." Number 24. Now it was about 3 months later that Judah was informed that his daughter-in-law Tamar had played the harlot, and she's pregnant. And she is with a child. Now, when you have twins, she's showing real good by that time, isn't she? She's got twins. She is with child by harlot. So Judah said, "Bring her out and let her be what? Burned." It was while she was being brought out that she sent to her father-in-law, saying, "I am with child by the man to whom these things belong." And she said, "Please examine and see whose signet ring and cord belt is this, and whose staff that has the lineage of his family on it." And Judah recognized them and said, "She is more righteous than I. I, inasmuch as I did not give her to my son Sheila, and he did not have relationships with her anymore. She was not a lustful woman. She was not a prostitute. She was a woman that got married and was going to have no children. And she was married into the coveted people of God. And God took care of her. Now, her children were maybe half Canaanite, maybe the full blood Jews. But this is a lineage. Now, look and see who it is. It came about at this time she was giving birth that, behold, there were twins in her room. Moreover, it took place that she was giving birth, and one put his hand out, and the midwife took and tied a scarlet thread on his hand, saying, "This one came out first." And it came about, as he drew back his hand, behold, his brother came out and said, "What a breach you have made for yourself." So he was named what? Perez. You go by in the New Testament, in Matthew 1 and Luke 3, and you're going to find out that the lineage of Jesus came through this child. And after his brother came out, who had a scarlet thread on his hand, and his name was Zerah. Perez means split. Perez is also the term in the days of Peleg, God divided the earth. Peleg means divided. And the word Pharisee means divided or set apart or split also. And the other child's was named Zerah, which means what? Young man. In Hebrew, Zerah. Seed. Seed. He was a seed. All right, seed. Zerah. All right, there you are. You can go into Luke, the 4th chapter, in Matthew 1 and 3, and Luke 3, 33, and you can see what happened with that. God created marriage. The world has perverted it. The world has messed up divorce. The world has turned marriage upside down, but God still has rules in His book for it. And God made marriage, and God created marriage while man was still in a state of innocence. And the marriage bed is undefiled in the sight of God. That's God's way. That's God's gift to man. Bill, Joanne is a gift of God. That's right, a gift. A gift. Of God. That's a gift. Thank you for your attention today. I know it was a long time. I hope you learned something from it. All right. I hope you learned something from it. All right, Brother David, I'm going to turn it over to you. Thank you for your attention. Go out and do something eternal.